Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. I'm welcoming back tonight. My returning guests are Mikaela Wieser, award-winning writer and radio producer, and Isaac Yuen, a Hong Kong-Canadian writer. But tonight, we're talking about their work, A Sturgeon's Dream, a libretto. Mikaela! Isaac, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having us again.
A Sturgeon's Dream, a libretto. You mentioned that after we talked the last time, and it was one of those things that so perked my interest, my curiosity. I had to do another show just to talk about this. And when you sent it to me, it really was a spectacular piece. Now, you've got to tell me, a libretto. First of all, most people I know who write, I think about the last thing that would write is a libretto. Who decided to do this, and how did you do it together?
Well, I guess I decided to do it because I was asked to do it.
Okay.
By a music and opera company here in Berlin.
Wow.
Called Auf und Da. I have worked for them or with them previously, but I decided to do it with Isaac because Isaac is just so knowledgeable about, well, first of all, prehistory and animals, that this would, in its density and the depth of the scientific facts, I don't think it would have been possible to do it as it is now without Isaac. So I think the way we did it is we discussed the shape together. Then I started writing. I was then visiting my mom in the Black Forest, which is a very different space to the Baltic Sea that this piece is about. So I would write a big outline of it, and then we just would go deeper and denser into each song. And then that's how it slowly unfolded.
Is there a specific definition of what a libretto is?
It's basically the text for an opera. You know, I would call it the backbone. It's what then the musicians and the director and everyone gets to then build their visions. So the nice thing is when you do a libretto, you know, you provide the storyline, you provide the feelings, and set a tone for what, you know, for the shape of everything. And so everyone has a guideline and then adds to it. So in the end, what you have is this, you know, piece where so many different minds and hands and ears and voices come together, but the libretto is really the first piece that sets the beat.
Wow. What about the music part of it?
That was done by the composers. By then we had already, so our part was finished with writing the libretto.
So you get the vocal part done.
Yeah, but that was then given to the singers and the musicians. It's really like once, and it's very important for a librettist to then step out of the picture and let everyone else go on with their vision. I think that's very important that you are not too hung up about your libretto.
Oh, I totally get this. This is like people who write scripts for films because you don't want them around when you're actually making the film.
Yes.
Because they'll go, no, I really meant this. So you had to step back. Were you nervous stepping back? So like, you know, what are they going to do with this piece? Because it's a heartfelt piece. Were you nervous at all, or you had total trust in the group that's going to produce it?
Yeah, I think that's the only way to do it, to then step out of it and trust everyone to do their best job. And because everyone wants to do their best job, right? So we came back we were there for the first performance.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched that, which was great. And I think I even read the last lines out loud from the audience. So that was nice.
Wow.
Okay.
I have 1,000 questions about the performance. Okay. And so this is the first time you're seeing the actual performances when it was performed for the public?
Well, I had a sneak preview when they were probing.
Okay.
So I had a glimpse of that. So I wasn't all, you know, and of course I would, you know, they would sometimes send me stuff and all. So that was good, you know.
Now, yeah. Were there costumes or were there people dressed in certain ways?
No, it was actually very modern and quite stark. So it was more, there were a lot of visuals.
There were.
Little films. Yeah. it was more minimalistic on the stage.
Wow. And how many people were actually on the stage?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe, Isaac, how many was it? Maybe 15, I would say?
Yeah. I mean, there were the singers, and then there's like the musicians. Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was probably a good dozen, I would think. Yeah.
Is there a recording of this? Is there a recording?
There's a recording. I don't have it. I can definitely, if you would like to play some of it, I can definitely ask.
Well, I was going to play it on my rock show or something. Now, the lyrics that I read were in English. Was it performed in English or German?
So it was performed in German, but the crew was so one of the singers was from Iran, so the musicians were international, so we delivered it in English, and I translated it into German, so that everyone, you know, was on the same page. It was performed in German.
Wow. So how... Okay, for both of you.
That often happens when Isaac and I collaborate. We always collaborate in English.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not. My German is not good enough to write, and it's a little bit. Usually, that's the route to go.
Okay.
Yeah, but usually I write my pieces in English anyway, so this comes so it's fine.
It's true.
It's fine.
I just can't imagine what it was like to write something of this caliber and then watch it be performed for the first time on stage. What were your emotional reactions? Isaac, go.
Well, I think... I think...
Go ahead.
You can go.
No, I was just going to say, Michaela's done this before, so she's written librettos and heard them perform before. But it was definitely my first experience, even though I know other librettists. I didn't consider myself one until then. So it was very interesting, you know, because it was like my first time at the time sort of experiencing the whole performance. And so I was like, as someone who wrote it, you know, you have to kind of sometimes leave you know, your work becomes adapted. It's like, I guess it's like a little bit like a novelist seeing an adaptation of their film, right? Like there's some parts you try to sort of recognize and some parts you're like, oh, there's like an adaptation there or liberty. That's something that I would never have thought of. And, you know, then there's the singing, which was really, really amazing. Like the singers were really good in terms of their, you know, like I'm also sort of new to the opera sort of scene. So it's really interesting and fascinating to see that whole sort of experience unfold in real time. And also because it was a little bit more modern, there's the visual component that's sort of mixed in with the audio component. So there's also that coming in.
Okay, stop right there.
It's a very unique experience.
Stop
sure.
right there.
Yeah.
Because you both talked about the visuals. What are the visuals? Were there slides of sturgeons?
There was a little movie clip with a hand-drawn sturgeon.
Okay.
That was, again, minimalistic.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think, what was really important in the process was that we went with the director and the visuals person. We went to Åland, to this island between Finland and Sweden. And we spent 1 week in summer there and talked to the Marine Biology Institute there. And did some trips out to the water and recorded the algae and the underwater sounds of the ferries and how that disturbed that very quiet landscape. And I think that was really what that trip really encapsulated most of what you find in the libretto, these 7 days and nights there.
Maybe you're just, you're used to it because you did it, but on this end, on my end, this sounds like an extraordinary experience.
It was.
Okay.
I hope I don't sound jaded. No, it was beautiful.
Well, you know, you're a librettist and you've had several librettos under your belt. So, and that's another question I've got to ask you. So when did you start doing librettos? That's not like one of those things that's on your job. You know, when I grow up, I want to be a librettist. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. So how did you start doing librettos?
Oh, I think it always like, yeah, when I tell people, they are always like, oh, that sounds so cool. You know, it's just one of those things. I guess there is always some kind of rhythm in your writing anyways.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
Like writing a screenplay, I think it's just fun. When I do my librettos, because most of the time I write nonfiction,
okay.
So creative fiction, and so writing librettos, I can really let my imagination wander far and wide. It's actually a lot of fun. And then it's like you create these images in your head, and then you're trying to find, it's almost like fishing the words out of thin air and then finding nice patterns with them.
I can't believe you said fishing the words. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guests tonight are Mikkola Visser, award-winning writer, radio producer, librettist, and Isaac Nguyen, a Hong Kong-Canadian writer and librettist. I think you have to stick that on your resume wherever you go. And tonight we're talking about their work.
You should put that on there.
You really should.
Good point.
We're talking about their work, A Sturgeon's Dream, a libretto. And I want to talk about that next, because this is an extraordinary piece, because it traces the evolution of the seas, of the continents, from deep time. It starts 210 million years ago. Why did you choose a sturgeon as the initial voice?
Yeah, why was the sturgeon the sort of initial impetus?
I don't know. She must know.
We had the discussion in the beginning. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking for an answer. You two.
I think it was because they're almost extinct in the Baltic. Mm-hmm. That was the reason.
Yeah.
And they're big. And there's also, there's one component. When I grew up, I had this audio tape with a fairy tale from, it was Russian fairy tales. And there was the story of a prince who would ride on a sturgeon.
Wow.
That's
going to hurt.
And there was really nice harp music with this audio
tape.
Yeah. And I would just listen to it day in and day out. And just imagine sitting myself on this jewel-studded sturgeon and soaring with him through the sea. I think that's maybe how it started. And then talking with Isaac back and forth about sturgeons and where they came from, it kind of And it's such an ancient fish and also ancient looking fish.
Oh, yeah.
That we anchored the piece with the sturgeon.
You can't stop, can you? You have to keep sticking these references into the water. You anchored the piece.
Yeah, I know. Nobody comes from me in a way. You know, like I'd be talking about the fathomless sea and so on. So it's like, but yeah, no, but so the sturgeon became the beginning and the end of the piece. So everything else takes place between the first sturgeon and the last sturgeon, you know, and that's so the first sturgeon. And the first act and the last sturgeon and the last act and in between everything else.
You keep coming back to the Baltic Sea throughout the piece. Mm. And was the piece written specifically for that geographical area?
I think that the special unique thing is like by visiting Lind in that area, we really got to learn about the origins and the formation of the sea. There are a lot of very surprising things about it. We think of the Baltic as, you know, this vast area, mm-hmm. but it's actually a very young sea, a very shallow sea. I think a lot of people like conveyed it as almost like basically just a bathtub compared to the North Sea. And it's basically not very salty. So all these conditions make this area very unique. And the more we were there, the more we, you know, talked to people who understood the biology and the ecology of the area and also the dependence that people have on the area. I think it's 9 countries border this particular sea, and millions and millions, tens of millions of people depend on it in various ways. So it's very sort of concentrated, very unique in terms of both its origins as well as its history. So I think we did definitely tailor a lot of the libretto and sort of the focus to particularly the Baltic, for sure. I think it would be a completely different piece if it was another sea, which.
And there's other fish in this piece too, which was fascinating to read about, sticklebacks. Nico Tinbergen, one of the fathers of ethology, did a lot of important research on sticklebacks, but what you brought up, which I didn't know, is because the fish that used to prey on sticklebacks have become few in number. There's a stickleback explosion, essentially.
Yeah. That's something we learned from the Marine Biology Institute up there in Arland.
Well, the weird thing about go ahead.
Yeah, because we looked at old documents of like especially like the herring of the Baltic Sea, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There would be sometimes herring swarms that would lift up ships.
You're right. You know, that's right.
Such numbers of herring, and you know they were pickled and sent to all the Catholic places in Europe. These herring from the Baltic Sea, it was a huge trade. But there was so much overfishing, especially during the last decades, that herring, which is a natural predator of stickleback, they've just gone so much down in number that the stickleback flourished. And stickleback would usually eat the algae, but they would usually eat
the filamentous algae. Or the snails and the invertebrates that would usually keep the filamentous algae in check. And now because those populations are down, like the filamentous algae, which kind of you see cloud the water, really are proliferating. Yeah,
that's the weird thing about this libretto. It's like also a sort of an introduction to the paleogeography of ichthyology. I mean, it's the stuff that's in this libretto are wild. I love the fact that you used the word umwelt, which I learned when I was a freshman in college from Jakob von Uxkull, who I think he was the one that invented that word, isn't he?
Yeah. And it's, we picked it up from Ed Yong's book,
yep.
In a Man's World. Unfortunately, in Germany, von Uexküll is a little bit, the Nazis really favored his ideas.
Whoops.
It took them so.
That never looks good on your resume, by the way.
But in Germany, Umwelt is also used a bit differently, but we used it in the way that Ed Yong used it in his book. That's the reference point for him.
Well, before we're going to run out of time, is there any way I could get you to read a section of this? That maybe about the ice?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you for asking.
Just go.
So this is a glacier solo. Who measures time when between freezing and thawing lies not one winter, but the formations of multiple landscapes and the possibilities of a million lives never lived? Cracked mirror in milky jade reflections, the movement of clouds, stars, the moon, howling over ruptured surfaces, an aching wind lifts up, crystallized gushes, crackles, a drift of shimmering snow. Underneath, the stillness of a thousand colors pressed into one, water solidified, startled into how heavy and hushed one can get, changing one from one form to the other. How long might this last, it asks, as ever more of its molecular kin turn into a thickening plate, dispersing light into iridescences, evoking the ancient ones. Stones it covers, granite, limestone, gneiss, basalt, or just before sunset, the shades of pink and purple haze. Once the movements and currents of a sea, a world, now the lives they hold are frozen, quiet. Where and when did it happen first, that tipping point that sparked the change from liquid to solid? First, mutual distance and playful intimacy, holding in constant movement with always just enough space between one another to change positions, shape the shapeless. Then, one molecule following another, arranging each other in ever neater lattice structure. I think I stop here. Huh?
Oh, okay.
Or should I go on?
Well, you can go on.
I can go on.
Go on.
Yeah. Yet, from the one to the other, the process continued, took over, became and lasted. A towering sheet of ice that silences land and sea, a burden, pressure on the subtle forms, thundering moss from stone, roots from soil, rocks from earth. A shudder again. At the southernmost edges, a thermal revolution permeates this glacier with thundering vibrations. Agitated water returns to that freedom of form, the liquid state, trickles and drizzles, percolations into thin streams, spurts, and flows. While the ice melts, the glaciers retract, the landscape sighs, rebounds. An unburdening gives way to fjords, flatlands, estuaries, where soon lichen, bushes, shrubs, and grasses absorb the barren.
That was beautiful when you hear it read. It really is. And I also just realized that this easily could be a poem that's published, because it has that kind of flow and that kind of content. It was great to have the pleasure of hearing you read that. Thank you.
Thank you. It reminded me now really how it was for me, and I think you as well, the first time that we ever went that far north. And then just knowing the story of the ice and knowing that the entire landscape that we were visiting then had been completely covered by ice 10,000 years ago. There was nothing, mm-hmm.
Kilometers thick.
Yeah, that's true here in Massachusetts. We were under several kilometers of ice.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, that's why the soil is so poor here, because the ice just sort of scoured all the stuff down to the bedrock mostly. Wow.
Yeah. And so for vegetation to come back, you know, there is a far less variety of vegetation up north than there is further south.
Yeah.
So the forests are more quiet, and there's a different kind of stillness there, and then especially, of course, with the northern light. But so the glaciers, you know, and also seeing all the rocks in the sea being so flattened and so smooth.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the presence of the ice is still very much there. And that was, I think that reflects in this glacier solo.
We only have like a minute or two left. Are you going to write another libretto? I mean, is this something like you sort of did it together and you found success and now you're going to write it again? And is there any chance of getting this like recorded, you know, so for public consumption, so that it would come out on an MP3 or a CD or something?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yet last time you
I think you could just read it, maybe with some sound effects.
I guess if the opportunity comes up for an interesting project that, you know.
Okay.
I think we're both receptive to it. I mean, we're okay, collaborating on a bunch of book projects, but yeah, you never know.
Well, we're going to have to keep us in mind, because I'd love to hear about what's coming up next. My returning guests tonight have been Michaela Wieser, award-winning writer, radio producer, librettist. Isaac Yuen, Hong Kong-Canadian writer, librettist. And tonight we've been talking about their work, which is just an amazing piece to just read. A Sturgeon's Dream, a Libretto. Both of you, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mark, for having us again. Thanks.
You're listening to WICN.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.